All right, buckle up for this one, folks, because today we're diving deep into a case that'll make you think twice about where you park your car.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right?
You know, it's the infamous Humble Oil and Refining Company versus George F. Martin, straight out of 1949.
A classic.
Now imagine this picture. It, Austin, Texas, a Humble Oil gas station sitting right on top of a hill.
A hill?
Yeah, like a steep one. And wouldn't you know it, a car's left unattended.
Oh,
Oh,
no.
yes, gravity takes over and boom, that car goes rolling down the hill straight into an accident.
So we're talking about more than just a fender bender here, right?
Oh, yeah, this is some serious stuff. Injuries, lawsuits, the whole nine yards.
So what are we looking at here? Who's at fault? The gas station, the car owner, or some kind of crazy combo of both?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Get this. Even the Texas Supreme Court couldn't quite agree. They ended up with a majority opinion, and a dissenting one.
Oh, a split decision.
Oh.
Those are always juicy.
They are. Now, before we get into the legal tug of war, let's set the stage. So we've got a car rolling downhill. Mr. Martin and his daughters are injured. But what exactly led to this whole chain of events?
All right, so picture this. Our main player here is Mrs. Love, a regular at this Humble station. She drops her car off for servicing.
Okay, routine stuff so far.
Right, but here's the catch. This gas station's layout, it was a little, let's just say, accident prone.
Accident prone. How so?
Well, it was perched on this slope, and the driveway where Mrs. Love parked had a pretty noticeable decline towards the street.
Okay, so they basically set the stage for a physics experiment gone wrong.
You could say that. And surprise, surprise, the unattended car decides to make its grand escape.
And Mr. Martin and his daughters were unfortunately in his path.
Right place, wrong time.
Talk about bad luck. But I'm guessing the majority opinion had something to say about that station layout, right?
Oh, absolutely. They zeroed in on that detail. They said, come on, it was totally foreseeable that an unsecured car could roll away.
But hold on a sec. Mrs. Love admitted she didn't set her parking brake, right?
She did. She fessed up to that.
So they still pinned it on the station even though she didn't set the brake.
The majority said Humble was responsible because their employees should have taken more precautions.
Oh, great.
They basically said, hey, it's like a store. The employee's like a clerk who should be looking out for these things.
Okay, so they're putting the responsibility on the business to keep things safe, even if the customer makes a mistake.
Exactly. They were all about that duty of care, especially with that station's layout, you know? Like if you walk into a store and there's a giant spill, no warning sign, you slip and fall. You'd expect the store to take responsibility, right?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Same concept here, just with cars and a whole lot of gravity.
Right. So they're holding Humble accountable. But what about Mrs. Love? Did they let her completely off the hook?
Not entirely. They said both she and D. Humble were liable for the Martins' injuries, meaning they both owed them damages.
Okay, so both are on the hook. But I bet there's a but coming.
There is a but. Here's where it gets interesting. They ruled that Humble gets full indemnity from Mrs. Love.
Hold up, indemnity. You got to break that down for us non-lawyers out there. What does that even mean?
Okay, good question. Indemnity basically means Humble could get reimbursed by Mrs. Love for any money they had to pay out. Think of it like this. You and a friend split a pizza. Your friend spills their drink all over it. Indemnity's like saying, hey, I'll help pay for a new pizza, but you're covering my half because you caused the mess.
So they're saying, yeah, we messed up, but she started this whole car rolling, pizza spilling situation.
Exactly. The majority's thinking was Mrs. Love created the risky situation by not securing her car. But hold on to your hats. There's another side to this story. The dissenting opinion had a whole different take on this indemnity thing.
Oh, I bet they did. Before we get there, though, there's one thing that's bugging me. The jury said Mrs. Love put the car in reverse.
Right? Yeah, that was a whole other can of worms.
Because an impartial witness who checked the car right after said the gear was in neutral, not reverse.
Yeah, and that's where things get kind of head-scratching.
Right. Because if the car was in reverse, how did it roll downhill?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It's like we're missing a piece of the puzzle.
You hit the nail on the head. And that's exactly what the dissenting opinion jumped on. They were like, wait a minute. The jury's findings don't add up, and the evidence doesn't make sense. How can we blame Mrs. Love when there's so much uncertainty?
So they're questioning the very foundation of the majority's argument for indemnity. This is getting good.
It is. And to hear the rest of their argument, we'll have to dive into part two of our deep dive. So the dissenting opinion really dug into this whole indemnity thing. They agreed that, yeah, both Humble and Mrs. Love were liable to the Martins, but they argued that once Mrs. Love left her car for servicing the gas station, became what's called a bailee.
Okay, Bailey. Now you're just using fancy legal jargon on me.
Yeah.
What does that even mean for those of us who don't spend our days in courtrooms?
All right, fair point. Think of it like this. When you drop off your clothes at the dry cleaners, they become the bailee of your clothes, right? They're temporarily responsible for taking care of your stuff and returning it in good condition.
So they're like a temporary caretaker.
Yeah.
Got it. So in this case, Humble became the temporary caretaker of Mrs. Love's car.
Exactly. And the dissenting opinion argued that as the bailee, Humble had a duty of care towards Mrs. Love's car, meaning they had to take reasonable steps to protect it and prevent any harm that might come to it.
Okay, so now they're shifting the focus from Humble's duty to the public to their specific duty towards Mrs. Love and her car.
Right. They were saying, look, Hummel was negligent on several counts. They didn't inspect the car properly. They didn't secure it. And they left it unattended on a sloping driveway.
And Mrs. Love.
Well, she was only found negligent on one count, setting the brake.
So the dissent saying Hummel messed up way more than Mrs. Love did, which makes that whole indemnity thing seem kind of unfair, doesn't it?
That was their whole point. They were like, hold on. Humble's trying to have it both ways. They want to hold Mrs. Love fully responsible, even though they were negligent too. And don't forget, they also brought up that whole issue with the gears being all messed up.
Right. All that conflicting evidence.
Yeah.
It sounds like they were pushing for a more balanced approach.
Exactly. They thought a fairer solution would be to allow for something called contribution. So instead of Mrs. Love having to pay Humble back for everything, they'd both share the financial burden.
Like splitting the cost of a new pizza after someone spills their drink all over it.
That's a perfect analogy. So the dissent's saying, hey, Mrs. Love shouldn't be the only one footing the bill, especially when there's so much uncertainty and evidence pointing to Humble's negligence too.
Okay, so they're challenging that whole idea that Mrs. Love should take all the blame. But didn't the dissenting opinion also have something to say about the majority's view on a gas station's duty to the public?
They did. They argued that a gas station's main duty to the public is to provide a safe environment for doing business, you know, selling gas, offering car services, that kind of thing. But they didn't think that duty should extend to preventing every single little mishap that could happen on their property.
So they're saying gas stations have responsibilities, but there are limits.
Right. They compared it to a customer slipping and falling on a wet floor. Of course, the gas station should try to keep things dry, but they can't be held responsible for every clumsy customer who doesn't watch where they're going.
Yeah, making them liable for every little thing seems a bit much.
That's what the dissent argued. They said the majority opinion was basically turning gas stations into insurers against any and all accidents, which they thought was unfair and would put way too much burden on businesses.
So it's about finding that balance, protecting the public, but also recognizing that businesses can't be expected to prevent every possible accident.
You got it. And this whole tension between those competing interests that's at the heart of so many legal cases. It's like trying to find that sweet spot, protecting individual rights, but also acknowledging the realities of running a business.
This case is really making me think about all the things that go into these legal decisions. It's not just about the facts, the case, or the laws, but these bigger societal implications too.
Absolutely. And this case in particular, it shows how legal reasoning isn't just about plugging stuff into a formula. It's about dealing with messy situations and trying to find the fairest solution even when there's no easy answer.
It's like a legal puzzle, piecing together evidence, arguments, precedents to make sense of it all. And sometimes, even with all the pieces, there's still room for debate and disagreement.
And that's what makes the law so fascinating. It's always changing, evolving as we face new situations and grapple with how society is changing.
Okay, so we've got this battle of opinions, complex legal stuff, and even some physics thrown in for good measure. What's the takeaway here? What should our listeners be thinking about after hearing all of this?
Well, for me, what's really striking is how even something as simple as a car rolling down a hill can raise such complicated legal questions. It shows that the law isn't just about black and white rules. It's about interpretation, context, and even a bit of philosophy.
It makes you realize that assigning blame, figuring out who's liable, it's not always so clear cut.
Exactly. So as we wrap up this deep dive, the question I'd leave our listeners with is this. Where do WE draw the line? What level of responsibility should businesses have for what their customers do? And how do we balance those responsibilities with the rights of individuals to make their own choices, even if those choices have some unintended consequences?
That's a great question. It's something we all deal with in our own lives,
right?
Whether we're running a business or just going about our day.
Right. So listeners, keep an eye out for those potential hazards. Read those contracts carefully, and don't be afraid to have those tough conversations about responsibility and accountability. You never know when you might run into a legal puzzle of your own.
Well said. And on that note, We've reached the end of our deep dive. But before we go, I've got one last question for you. You mentioned that the dissenting opinion had more to say about a gas station's duty to the public. What was their take on that?
Well, they were saying that while a gas station definitely has a duty to the public, it's not like this total absolute duty to prevent every little thing that could go wrong. You know what I mean?
Right. So there are limits to that duty.
Exactly. And they really emphasize that a gas station's main responsibility to the public is to provide a safe place to do business, like selling gas, providing services and stuff like that.
Okay. That makes sense. So they were drawing a line between that general duty to the public and a more specific duty related to the gas station's actual operations.
Yeah. They thought the majority opinion was taking that duty way too far. Like, they pointed out that if a customer leaves their car unsecured on a hill, it's not automatically the gas station's job to stop it from rolling away.
So they're saying just because an accident happens on their property, it doesn't mean the gas station's automatically at fault.
Right. They even compared it to a situation where a customer slips and falls on a wet floor. Obviously, the gas station should try to keep their floors dry, but they can't be held responsible for every single customer who's not paying attention to where they're going.
Right. It's like you can't expect them to be mind readers.
Exactly. And the dissent was worried that if you held gas stations to that kind of standard, it would just be crazy. It would be unfair and put way too much pressure on them to prevent every little thing that could possibly happen.
So it's about finding that balance between protecting the public and recognizing that businesses can't control everything.
Right. And that's a really important point, because that tension between those competing interests, that's something you see all the time in legal cases. It's like trying to find that middle ground.
Yeah.
You know, protecting people's rights, but also acknowledging the realities of running a business.
It's fascinating how this case makes you think about all the different factors that go into making these legal decisions. It's not just about what happened or what the law says. It's about the bigger picture, too, like how it affects society and what's fair.
You're right. This case is a perfect example of how legal reasoning isn't just about following a formula. It's about looking at the whole messy situation and trying to find the most just and practical solution, even when there's no easy answer.
And sometimes there isn't an easy answer. Mm. Like, even after we've analyzed everything and heard all the arguments, there's still room for debate and disagreement.
Exactly. And that's what keeps things interesting. It's why the law is always evolving and changing as we encounter new situations and as our values as a society change, too.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here. Yeah. We started with a car rolling down a hill and ended up exploring all these different legal concepts and competing perspectives. It's been a really thought-provoking deep dive.
I agree. And what I find really interesting is that even after all this discussion, there's no one right answer. This case doesn't give us a clear rule to follow. It's more like a framework for thinking about responsibility and negligence and the limits of legal liability.
It's like the court gave us a toolbox and said, all right, go out there and use these tools to figure out these complex situations in the real world.
And that's part of what makes the law so fascinating. It's not just a set of rules written in stone. It's a dynamic system that's always adapting to new challenges and new ways of thinking.
So as we wrap things up here, what's the one big question you would want our listeners to think about after hearing all of this?
I think the question that really sticks with me is, where do WE draw the line? How much responsibility should businesses have for the actions of their customers? And how do we balance that responsibility with the right of individuals to make their own choices, even if those choices sometimes have consequences that they didn't intend?
It's a tough question.
Yeah.
But it's an important one for all of us to consider, because we're all part of this big legal system, whether we realize it or not.
That's right. So listeners, pay attention to your surroundings, read those contracts carefully, and don't be afraid to have those conversations about responsibility and accountability. You never know when those things might come in handy.
Great advice. And on that note, we've reached the end of our deep dive into Humble Oil and Refining Company versus George F. Martin. Thanks for joining us, folks. And until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and most importantly, stay out of legal trouble.